Joining us on the summit today is Dr. Dietrich Klinghart, the well-known integrative physician who's been very outspoken and pioneering on a number of issues, including electromagnetic radiation and its effects and what we can do to protect ourselves. So Dr. Klinghart, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's a joy, Josh, to talk to you.
You too. Again, yeah, we last chatted, I guess, on camera a number of years ago in Take Back Your Power. So thanks for making time for to catch up with us again. You're currently in the UK, right?
Yeah, I'm just south of London with Daniela, who is the co-founder of my work here in Europe.
Excellent. So I'll share with our audience your background in brief, and then we'll dive in. So Dr. Dietrich Klinghart is founder of the Klinghart Institute and Klinghart Education in the UK, the American Association of Neurotherapy, and is lead clinician at the Sophia Health Institute located in Woodinville, Washington. He's also founder and chairman of the Institute for Neurobiology in Germany. And Dr. Klinghart has written several books, the latest of which is on Lyme disease, called The Biological Treatment of Lyme Disease, currently available in German. And I want to read that in English, so keep me posted. In recognition of his pioneering work, Dr. Klinghart has received numerous awards in the USA. So just diving in, I mean, you are recognized around the world for your insights and your helping to bring the conversation forward, both in terms of awareness and specifically in solution and what's working. So just diving in, what have you noticed going back to 3G and 4G even in effects on your patients and within the body of science?
Yeah, so I mean, the main thing I think that sets me aside maybe from some other more well-known speakers is that I actually see patients every day and follow them and their families for 10 years, 20 years. I've been in practice now 45 years. And so I have an overview of a longitudinal development of children, adults, their children. And in conclusion, I can say 3G was an absolute disaster. And it is very clear from the physics of it that 5G, that's going to be disaster squared. But here's some of the facts. So it's important for people to understand that it's not just the amplitude, the strength of the signal, but it's the frequency that decides what the biological effects are of a radiation that hits us. And so many of the listeners will know that the Rife technology or frequency-specific microcurrent, that any of these technologies you can use for healing and you can use for destruction. And it is very clear that 2.4 gigahertz was used intentionally for destruction. You know, it was developed in England to make masses of the population docile.
With Wi-Fi, 2.4 gigahertz.
You use the 2.4 gigahertz to make population docile, but also before it was mass introduced, it was known that over three generations of exposure, it would turn an entire population infertile, which is the effects of that which we are seeing. That was the research that was related to us by Barry Trower, you know, a scientist from England who was highly involved in this and is now trying to warn against the effects of this. And I know you're aware of Barry and his work. And so, but it is very, very clear, like as a medical doctor, that we have a crisis of infertility. You know, in the time since Wi-Fi was instituted, the sperm count in men has dropped by more than half. And fertility rates have dramatically gone down. There is other factors involved. You know, we know that there's certain aspects of the vaccines, which I cannot mention here, and certain environmental toxins that are in our food that also contribute to that. But Wi-Fi has played a huge role. And so where I come in into the whole thing is in 2005, the Karolinska Institute, Ole Johansson, published a wonderful research paper where he looked at the incidence of Alzheimer's disease in populations in Sweden and the exposure to Wi-Fi. And there was a clear high correlation between Wi-Fi exposure and the incidence of Alzheimer's disease. And if you roll it forward, he warned that this is going to cause a mass disaster. Come 2019, the estimate is that half the population alive today will die with or of Alzheimer's disease. That is entirely driven by Wi-Fi, by the exposure to Wi-Fi. And it's a disaster waiting to happen. That actually is not waiting to happen, it's already happening. And if you ever work in my office, you know, I invite anyone, any politician listening to this, to come to my office and watch a whole day of children with autism and adults with Alzheimer's disease. And when you actually see that that you can reverse many cases of autism by simply protecting the children from the exposure to Wi-Fi, you don't need any scientific study, you know, to see the results of that. And when you see that you can reverse at least many of the early cases of Alzheimer's disease by simply protecting the adult from the exposure to Wi-Fi, you don't need a scientific study to tell you that we're in the midst of a huge disaster. The same is with women that are infertile. Some of that is reversible by protecting them from Wi-Fi. So, in short, the 2.4 gigahertz used in 3G, and most of the 3G, was an absolute disaster that was very well documented in the scientific literature. And we were all had expected that common sense would prevail, that the studies that are out there at least would have led to other good studies that would have shown that this is unsustainable for human evolution, and that has not happened. I want to remind the people that are watching this that several years ago was a court case in Italy where a young man died of brain cancer, and then his mother sued the company that he was working for that had forced him to use the cell phone all day long. And so the judge, in his wisdom, did a very simple thing in court. He had the side that defended the client make a pile of all the scientific studies that showed Wi-Fi causes brain cancer and is dangerous. And the other side, the industry, making a pile of papers of the things that show Wi-Fi was safe. And it was a much, much larger pile. And then the judge, having Italian common sense, said, okay, now let's remove all the papers that were sponsored by the Wi-Fi industry. And that pile went to zero, and the other pile stayed the same it was before. And the judge ruled the Wi-Fi industry is at fault, or the workplace is at fault for causing brain cancer. And that case stands. And I wished American judges would use the same kind of wisdom. There's a problem in America is that the judges are elected officials that don't even have to study law to become a judge. And it's a disaster that sometimes people become judges that never even graduated from high school. And so reading or understanding science or scientific study is not part of their armamentarium. And so America is kind of heading for a big disaster in that way. But so just to maybe say this very clearly, you know that I'm about 15 years ago, we did some, or 12 years ago, we did some measurements for autistic children. Basically, we had a control group of 10 healthy children and a group of 10 autistic kids. We went to their homes where the mother was when she was pregnant, and we constructed the same Wi-Fi router and the same conditions and measured that the moms that gave birth to a child that was later diagnosed with autism were exposed to over 20-fold the amount of Wi-Fi radiation than the mothers that gave birth to a child that gave birth to a normal, typical child, more than 20-fold. And I tried at the time to get the study published. I couldn't find anybody interested. In fact, I got one threatening letter back, and so I decided to cool it and to, at the time, wasn't right for it. So since then, however, I've been treating the autistic children that come to my practice very rigorously. That the condition number one, on day one of the first visit, the parents get the Wi-Fi talk, how they need to protect the child. You know, they need to get rid of the Wi-Fi router altogether in the house. They need to switch off the fuses at night. They need to get a sleep sanctuary, you know, the protective cloth of their bed, and the kids need to wear protective clothing.
Okay, and then, so what you're seeing results, Dietrich, in cutting the Wi-Fi and protecting autistic kids from Wi-Fi radiation, especially in their sleeping areas. What else in terms of protective measures has worked and is working to help restore health?
Yeah, let me be very clear. So there is daytime strategies, there is nighttime strategies, and there is external protection and there's internal protection. Let me go through that. Yeah. So the nighttime strategy is pretty clearly at nighttime, we request that the children have the sleep sanctuary that is like a mosquito net with silver-coated cloth. Now there is newer materials that are coming out now that are probably more suited to shield against the 5G. We don't know that for sure yet, but the Swiss Shield was the name of the cloth that the mosquito net was sewn from, and that had to enclose the entire child, you know, had to be over the child and under the child and make a Faraday cage. And what people forgot very often is that that shield needs to be grounded. That means it needs to be a wire coming from that conductive cloth running into the earth. There was a foul compromise to use the earth in the electric outlets, but there was very often the only thing we can do if people live in the seventh floor of a high-rise apartment. We could not request that they run a wire alongside the house down on the ground. So we used the ground in the outlet. So that's number one. Number two, the sleep sanctuary becomes dangerous if you have strong pulsating electric fields in the room. So we requested at least that room, the fuses that are responsible for the electric outlets in that room and the electric wiring in the walls of the room, they have to be out for the night, ideally the whole house. That's the nighttime strategy that works. And daytime strategy is, even though with autistic kids, parents have to get a wired connection. The router has to be off, has to be on a mode that doesn't broadcast. Now, it used to be a simple thing in the computer where you could switch off the broadcasting option of the Wi-Fi router. Now, the modern routers do no longer have that option. They're intentionally wired the way you cannot switch them off. And so we back them. You know, we have a little company, littletreegroup.com here in Seattle. Lynn, she's a retired woman. She sews these bags out of the Swiss Shield, and you can single or double bag the Wi-Fi router to make sure it's off. So that's one part. But during the daytime, when the kid runs around, we have two strategies that work. One is protective clothing. I know there is a lot of stupid discussion going on. You know, people have a strong opinion that the clothing is dangerous and doesn't work, and people having the opinion that it does work. Well, I have 20 years of experience that it does work. And I don't give a hoot about anybody's opinion. You know, the clothing does work. You know, metal deflects Wi-Fi, and basically you want to turn the children in the night in shining armor. You know, where the larger the body areas that are covered with deflective cloth, the better the children are doing. That's also the main part of the external protection. But the internal protection is, first of all, there is several natural products that hugely enhance the ability of the body to not absorb radio waves. And that is a tincture of rosemary, propolis from the bees, and elantro or coriander. And so there's a British company, Key Science, KI Science, makes a product called Ray Wave. And so we have all the children on that. And the more they take, the more stable they are. The second company also has developed a cream, a skin cream, that makes the skin reflective of Wi-Fi. It contains saffron and several other really precious herbal ingredients. There's nothing chemical in it. And so we found when the kids are basically lathered up in the cream in the morning, and then they go to whatever they go to, special schools and special kindergartens, or are at home in the environment, and now some electric circuits are on because the parents need to work and they need to have lights and the fridge needs to be on. That has been hugely, hugely protective. It's called the E-Shield cream or E-Shield lotion. You know, I could go into details. Maybe one more detail that we found, this is more for adults with electro hypersensitivity. We found if you gave astronomically high amount of methylated folate, that almost everybody within 3 to 4 months becomes neurotypical in terms of their responses to the Wi-Fi environment, being outside in electric environments or being close to a cell phone tower. They no longer have the neurological symptoms, but this is like 20 to 50 milligrams of methylated folate, which many practitioners are scared of. It is a small possible cancer link later in life, but it's absolutely life-saving for a lot of my extremely hypersensitive patients. Yeah, so that's a little bit on the internal protection, you know, and then
let me just jump in there quickly. Is there a specific brand or type of methylated folate that you found best?
No, that's now marketed by many vitamin companies, but most of them have like, you know, offer 0.5 milligrams or 1 milligrams. There is one company, I forgot what the name of it, Metabolic something, they produce at least a 10 and a 20 milligram methylated folate. That makes it a lot easier, especially for the autistic kids. Now, many autistic kids are under-methylated, and there's certain symptoms, I'm not going to go into that, of under-methylation, and then when you actually give them high doses of methylation, after a few months, it flips that they become hyper-methylated, and then you need to stop. But you recognize it, that the behavior gets better and better and better, even in electric environments, and then suddenly it flips as if they're having a flare-up, and then you know now they're over-methylated, and then you have to stop for a few months. And it cycles forth and back between over and under. But I think these are sort of like the big strokes. But the important thing for me is it was absolutely stunning and amazing for me that I could really say that I have two groups of autistic children, the ones that get dramatically better and the ones that don't. And the ones that are getting dramatically better are the ones that following my EMR protection to a T. And the ones that are not getting better are the ones that think they are following it, but then, you know, when I ask them unrehearsed, okay, what is it that you're actually doing? I realize they're making one mistake at another. They may have the sleep canopy, but they're not grounding it. Or they may even ground it, but they leave the fuses on for the electric circuitry in the room. Or they don't do any of the daytime protection, or they don't do the methylation. So there is usually something missing. But I think the truth is, you know, we've established firmly in my clinical experience that the exposure to Wi-Fi has led to the biggest health crisis of our time, destroying the lives of children. Now, when I say autism, you're sort of, yes, that's the extreme, but the less injury is the hyperactivity, the attention deficit in children that is now the new normal. And the kids, instead of getting the advice to limit their Wi-Fi exposure and their radio wave exposure, they're put on Adderall and Ritalin and all the drugs that come down with a whole list of developmental problems that express themselves later in life. That means these kids are crippled for life, or really are becoming drug dependent for the rest of their life, which you may think sometimes may be an intent that's going to work in that whole thing. You know, they lose their freedom and their medical independence, you know, early on in life instead of being directed at what's causing the hyperactivity or the attention deficit, being directed at here's a pharmaceutical solution, you know, sort of that makes you tolerate the environment better. Yeah, and so, but maybe one more last thing to this. What we're also observing now, since I've done this long enough, when a parent is exposed to constant bombardment with electromagnetic radiation and starts being symptomatic, they have increased, I will get into that later, you know, but they have increased food allergies, they have increased brain fog, and a variety of symptoms that they're not relating to the electromagnetic exposure. If these parents have children, their already negative response of the parents will be quadrupled or increased more in their offspring. And the offspring will be extremely electrosensitive. And if these children, and I have some in the third generation now, have children, the children will be autistic. You know, so there is a cascade of worsening from generation to generation. And we understand, you know, now that the Wi-Fi, amongst many of its other blessings, is that it damages the DNA, and that, of course, is passed on to the next generation. And then, you know, it goes up exponentially. Let's say in the first generation, you have 100 genes damaged. In the next generation, there will be 2,000. And in the next generation, there will be all the genes. We only have 23,000. So there's not that much.
Can you talk about like is there a certain threshold which you go past and then you haven't seen any evidence of repair possible? It just, the DNA, for example, doesn't repair, but like it does up to a certain threshold. Is it, what can you tell us in terms of like the reversibility or irreversibility of these types of damage?
Well, we know there is, I mean, this is from clinical observation from people smarter than me. There is a synergistic effect with the vaccine history. You know, so the higher the amount of vaccines that a child has gotten, the more electrosensitivity the next generation will be. So let's say you grow up fairly normally, you have the normal vaccine program. If you have children, that predicts the level of electro-hypersensitivity or I don't want to give you, we should define that. So everybody is to the same degree electrosensitive, no matter what. You get the same cancer rates, you get the same rate of food allergies, of headaches and all that. Electro-hypersensitivity is a smaller group amongst us humans that has also allergic phenomena. That means they get mast cell activation, or they get, like, in addition to the chronic problems, they get acute problems. So when I refer to electrosensitivity, I refer to what we're all sensitive to. And there's a number of environmental factors that we see consistently that makes us more sensitive. You know, so one is the history, one is the presence of mercury amalgam fillings, of metal crowns, a study that just came out when children of orthodontic work, that the Wi-Fi environment that determines how much nickel is released from the wires that they have in the mouth. And this nickel toxicity causes severe allergic phenomena in the system. So there's a whole host of interactions that we all have with the Wi-Fi environment that are very well published now. And they're all pointing as if we're sitting in the middle of a disaster. It could be ended. I mean, the wonderful thing, as you know, the whole disaster could be ended with a switch of one single switch, you know, switching it off. We all be liberated.
Yeah. Switching off your Wi-Fi router or protecting it, like with one of those bags from Little Tree Group, for example, right? So it can't emit wireless. It's using a wired mouse, wired keyboard. It's getting the transmitting smart meter off of your house, getting opting out or whatever you need to do there. Not basically using a cell phone, as little as possible, like zero ideally, and not letting your kids use it, right? Can you talk a little bit about these types of quick things that people can do and maybe perhaps add to that list?
Yeah, I mean, the thing, the cell phone use is very hard to control in kids. We have a rule here in England in the community that we, Daniela and I, live in, where the kids have to be at least 15 years old before they can get the very first phone. And then the phone use needs to be limited by the parents, especially they're not allowed to use it in the evening because that destroys the melatonin production and that sets up limits to the neurological development of their brain, the memory, the learning, all that gets impaired. And so there's some pretty strict rules. And of course, kids should only be texting, which kids won't follow that advice. And the limited use of the phone is, of course, up to the parents to establish a kind of relationship with the kids that they can push that through. It is very, very difficult now to be a parent these days because of that. But we do know that the cell phone use of teenagers and of children is destroying the humanity of the brain. You know, it is limiting the brain development in a way that certain aspects of humanity, like compassion and considering others, are the first parts of the brain that get disabled. And that is a very scary development. And so there is the YouTube system, this loudspeaker system where you plug in a headphone, but not the usual headphone, but that uses plastic air tubes that conducts the sound in your ears. That is a very good system if you want to make phone calls, but kids and teenagers have not taken to that because they have to fiddle with it for a little bit before they can put it on. And so that has failed in our world. So the real thing is, you know, people should keep a wired connection at home and should give the kids their own wired connection and their own room where they can make the evening phone calls with their friends and all that. It should not be done on the cell phone. And then, of course, the strength of the signal diminishes with the square of the distance. So when people use a loudspeaker and can have the phone a foot or a foot and a half away from the mouth, it's a huge reduction in damage that occurs with that. So there's some obvious details that require only common sense where people don't really need to have an understanding of physics. I know that that you also, you have become sort of the world expert on the smart meters. We're very excited about this new box from England that reduces the signal from the smart meters, you know, by wiring it to the electric system in the house. And I'm sure you're going to let people know about that development in your own talk, but we look it, and it's a very exciting development to diminish some of the damage that comes in from the outside.
Yeah, we're interviewing Terry Stotine as part of the summit, who has the technology that gets rid of the dirty power, dirty electricity at the root. And there are other technologies as well that block the wireless, in the process of solving this greater problem and getting these things off everyone's houses. But there are some encouraging developments in the past year that even utilities are seeing that there's no return, there's no real benefit that even they're getting from this horrible technology in light of the risk and the liability and the fires and everything. So wanted to just to dive in more about the comparison. What could you tell us about 3G and 4G and now 5G? What's your understanding of the differences in these technologies?
Mm-hmm. So 4G, I can't really comment on because somehow that development was skipped yet in England. Like, they still have 3G here. But in London, they rolled out now in certain sections of London, the 5G. And I never had the opportunity to get clinical experience in the 4G environment. But I can, I think, quite competently talk about 5G. So first of all, the technology behind it is quite complex. You know? And what I said at the beginning, that the damaging effect of the cell phone radiation is not just the amplitude of what you're getting, but it's also it's frequency specific, the damage. And we know Barry Trower told us that currently there is, you know, when I first got into the 5G discussion, one expert says, well, it's 3.4 gigahertz. I said, great, we can handle that. Then somebody else says, no, it's 10 to 30 gigahertz. And as it turns out, there is actually a wide variety of frequencies used, at least 22, I think Barry Trower identified. And the one that's rolled out already in London is 28 gigahertz in several sections. And that's an enormous increase in frequency. In general, the biological effects can be predicted to some degree. I know from my mentors in biophysics, you know, this is really like what we're talking about. At the end of the day, it's all about biophysics. How is this aspect of physics interfering with our biology? And we know that the human biofield uses frequencies in the ranges from 10 to 30 gigahertz. That has been measured and established by clever Russian scientists 15 years ago, 20 years ago, as soon as there were instruments that could measure it. And this is exactly the range now where we will broadcast the entire population with man-made frequencies that are resonant in the same range where the human body is producing its own frequencies that are important for the cell-to-cell communication, but also the way our organism communicates with its field, with the plants around us, with other people, with our pets. And so the expectation that I have from this is that it's going to be dehumanizing us. It may not even have visible, on the surface, very clear medical effects that can be measured, but it will certainly have huge effects on the more subtle aspects of humanity that there's absolutely no question, because it's exactly in those frequency ranges where our higher functions of consciousness, of compassion, of love are. And so, and I cannot go away from thought that may be intentional, you know, that this has been long planned for. And because we had other technologies, we had fiber optic systems, which were fantastic and they were healthy for us. And there was a decision made at some point, no, we're not going to go intelligently here. We're going to go for the total destruction of the human condition. And, you know, the trouble with the 5G is that it needs a more dense network of cell phone towers because of the nature of it. And the idea is that it will also line country roads and, you know, more rural areas so they can be part of this beautiful development. Elon Musk, you know, is planning on sending 1,200 satellites up in the air. I'm invited to actually talk to one of his family members to talk sense into them, and I will probably do that, because Musk is not a bad person, but just ignorant or misinformed, you know, like most people are. I think the main point that people need to know is that none of the frequency ranges that are coming towards us have been evaluated for the effects on anything living. You know, the FCC and other institutions that are controlling this development, they're the ones that negotiate, you know, the frequency bands are sold by the government to the suppliers. And so the government, greedy as any government in the world is, and a hugely money-consuming machine, that, like, they used to sell off land, you know, when it was available. Now they're selling off frequency bands. And of course, it's good business, and so there's absolutely no consideration given what these frequency bands will do to us humans. So I'm sure you have other speakers say the same thing, but it is just absolutely appalling, you know, because in the U.S. we have a special arrangement that the industry can do anything they want, and only if there's evidence of harm, then people can sue, and then that technology can be removed or lessened. In Europe, it's the other way around, you know, that the industry should first show that there is no harm. And of course, they use the stupid standards, you know, of cell phone radiation heating up the body when there's a certain thing. So they use the standard of biological testing that is absolutely inadequate. But at least there's a little bit more protection in Europe. And so I think the truth is, you know, with all of us self-appointed experts, the technology is kept secret so far. What actually will be used, and what's used in one location may not be the same as it used in another location, and the exact, and basically it's a huge experiment rolled out, and probably it will be found that in some location everybody goes blind, in another location all the insects die, in another location all the people die, and there may be one of the frequency bands that actually doesn't do harm, and that will eventually hopefully crystallize out, and then it will be used. But until then, there's going to be a lot of damage. We know that for sure.
Yeah. I know. I think that what you said also about you're starting to really, you know, question the intent of this technology. Something that would lend support to that, you know, idea that perhaps at a high enough level, even though not everybody perhaps within the industry and government is in on it, perhaps at a high enough level, this is being done on purpose to, you know, perhaps minimize or reduce the population, to you know, strengthen the grip of the pharmaceutical industry, as you described earlier with the drugs and how they're being prescribed. But we know that as early as the 1970s, Dr. Klinghart, as you know, most of our audience knows, but just connecting this dot, thousands of studies were already published by the 1970s on the effects of microwave radiation, and also a considerable number of studies on the effects of millimeter wave radiation. So for that to, so those results were known, right? So this is maybe in some ways it's an experiment against the Nuremberg Code. You can't experiment with people on people without their consent. But in other ways, perhaps there's a deeper thing happening here that we really need to, you know, bravely look into. So I wanted to just to dive in a couple more questions about the wireless and the solutions, and then maybe we'll finish with some dot connecting information for our audience. Can you talk about, are there other technologies that you haven't mentioned yet that you really recommend for people to protect from wireless and millimeter wave radiation? Like, what else works, and is there anything else in addition to the list that you mentioned previously?
Yeah, one of the big successes in our practice was to detoxify people from metals. You know, so all of us have a significant toxic metal burden, lead is in everybody's bones, cadmium from the car exhaust. A substantial number of people are mercury toxic, you know, from eating fish, from many, many other sources, even the ambient air. And the iron content, you know, even in the system, plays a huge role. Meat eaters have a lot more iron in their system than others, and it's the metals that are mostly resonant with the Wi-Fi. That means the Wi-Fi would go through us if we just would be water, or in fact, you saw with the duck experiment that water is pretty good in deflecting Wi-Fi. And so we a big strategy is to detox people from heavy metals. And I think in that context, it's interesting that with the announcement that Wi-Fi is now, with 5G is now going to be the new deal, pretty much on the same day, the FDA in the US stopped the availability of DMPS, the main drug that we need to get these metals out of people. On the same day that the FDA ruled, you know, 5G is safe and we're going to go forward, they ruled no more metal detox agent. You know, the main metal detox agent was removed from the list of things that's available. But no reason, there were no incidents, there were no cases of death or anything of that. So I think it shows, like, the sinister part of that very well. So yes, detoxing metals is a huge issue. We're experimenting with different waters right now. One of the things we're very excited about is a water that Chris Exley is the main aluminum. So we're all aluminum toxic, and aluminum is resonant with Wi-Fi with certain frequencies. And Chris Exley is the main aluminum researcher in the world, and he found a water full of organic silica compounds, different ones, hundreds of different compounds, that actually very quickly leaches out aluminum from our system. And we found when people drink that water for just 6 weeks, they become much more stable in Wi-Fi environments. It's called acillus water. It's basically silica spelled backwards. And right now I know KI Science has that available. So the metal detox, of course, you know, I've been lecturing on heavy metal detox for decades, but it has become an amazingly effective tool in making people stable in the high Wi-Fi environments. I'm sure when I actually talk with patients, I have a lot more ideas. I'm just blanking out right now what else we're doing.
No, you've already provided so much value here just in this, a string of things that are working that people can do. And so we encourage everyone just to do your own research on these and start to engage in these solutions for yourself and your kids and your parents and the elderly.
Maybe there's one more thing, you know, sort of metals deflect Wi-Fi. And that's going to be the same for the 5G, whatever higher frequencies are used. They actually have to turn up the power quite a bit to penetrate buildings, so you have reception on the inside, you know. And the original compromise that I would have swallowed was that every house gets a little antenna on the outside that conducts the Wi-Fi signal on the inside, and then the Wi-Fi signal on the outside and the places, public places available to everybody, would have been a fraction of what is needed now to penetrate through concrete buildings and get to the inside. And so the idea right now to put a cell phone tower every 100 yards or so is ridiculous. And I like to get this off my chest, you know, sort of none of the people that I know, reasonable people, have ever asked for the need for 5G. You know, we were quite happy with 3G, was doing everything. We could stream films and we could do things. I just had a meeting with one of the high up executives of AT&T, and they're all totally excited about the new possibilities of what 5G can do, the faster networks can do in industrial settings. But then when I went down the list, and I'm not going to spill the beans here because I'm not allowed to, none of these things are serving anybody in a normal state of mind. These are all special applications. I mean, who in the world was asking for a driverless car? I mean, let's face it, you know, so my greatest joy is in a moment to get in the car and play with, put the music on and be in my own world there, and having that displaced by a driverless car. And the driverless car is the only thing that makes the 5G really necessary, and also will make it necessary that every 100 yards or so there is a cell phone tower that's emitting device. So meaning that there's not going to be any more spaces left for us to be in a Wi-Fi poor environment. So the driverless car basically destroys the surface of the planet to make it a livable space. And it's very clear that wherever there is driverless car space, the roads are prepared for that. There will not be any bees, there will not be any insects, and therefore there will be not any songbirds. And so we are replacing songbirds and the beauty of life with driverless cars. I don't think anybody is really asking for that. I don't think we've degenerated that far.
Yeah, the as part of the summit, Dr. Timothy Sheckley is interviewed, and I just encourage everyone again to check out that interview. He kind of destroys the argument that even if we wanted driverless cars, 5G is not needed, number one. And he lays the foundation for, even better than having, you mentioned, the idea of just a small Wi-Fi signal to the house and then the house...